You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Good morning and welcome to the Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports Station. No Mike Salk today. He's still at home getting better, resting up. Instead, you got me, Michael Bumpus. And I got Robert Turbin joining me today, but we also got Justin Barnes and Brady on the ones and twos in the background. Turbo, good morning. How you doing, man?
What's up with it, Bump? I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing okay. It's Friday. We ain't got nothing
Friday
to do. So we're here talking sports, man, real quick. Hey, so you're in the Bay Area. And I thought about you last night. You know, we got the Warriors. We're going to touch on the Warriors a little later today, but I thought about Turbo in the Bay Area. You guys got to be feeling good over there. But then I also thought about you because we talked about you slicing apples the other day, just the dad life, right?
Right, right.
And I'm in the trenches in the dad life too, man. I got a 12, a 9, and an 8. And I brought a hat home the other day. It's a nice neon peak hat that fans are going to be able to get at the Mariners games tonight. The first 10,000 fans will get this pink neon Mariners hat. So I bring the hat home, Turbo, and I'm like, I call my son Michael. I call him Pops. I go, hey, Pops, man, I got this neon hat. You think I can rock it? He goes, I don't know, Dad. I don't know. So I come home the next day. He hops off the bus. Guess what he's wearing, Turbo?
He wearing that neon hat.
He wearing that neon hat. So I guess I couldn't do it, but he could pull it off. You ever had a moment like that? Your kids are still kind of young, though, huh?
Yeah, 10 and 5. And so a little bit different. And my girl is 10. She's older, you know what I mean? But she does have the style that, well, really they both got some swag. And obviously they get it from me because, you know, I'm the style guy in the family. But he was just trying to show you how to do it. Bump, he was just trying to show you. He's like, man, you look kind of, you sounded kind of insecure. Like, you asking me, let me show you.
Hey, Justin, you think you can pull off the neon pink Mariners hat?
I am all for the louder the better. So it's just one of those things. I mean, you have to pretend like you own it and that it's already a part of your personality. And you got to act like you've been there. So if you show up without any confidence in that pink neon, people are going to spot it. Yeah. But if you just pull in like you own the place, it's different.
I'm looking at the fact that you were the first one to get the hat, Bump. You got the hat before 10,000 people. Man, you must be taking over out there, man.
You know, I can't claim that I was the first one because I saw Dave Wyman with it first. So
okay.
Wyman, but I don't, and I looked at it and I go, this seems like 80s, 90s. Like, this is your era right here. And then Wyman goes, but man, I had neon pants, neon jackets. I mean, that's just 80s and 90s. And then Justin, you brought it up that on the slopes, right? That's where you see a lot of the neon bright colors and whatnot.
The one-piece snowboard or skiing, you know, zip-up stuff, it was all pink. It was all neon yellow. It was all that gross, whatever. It's a green. I don't even call it green. And then do you remember, and maybe this was just because it was where I grew up, we had, like, neon everything swim gear, too. Like, all the life jackets were always that faded neon from laying out in the boat. But yeah, man, neon's 90s, and I'm stoked to see all the pink hats in the pen tonight because it's going to look funny when the camera pans around and just bright pink in that area.
I get the neons when it comes to swimming and skiing because I think of safety, right? I got to be able to spot out if someone's in trouble and if they need my help. So I get it, but it kind of makes me feel, well, something you brought up yesterday, I think, Justin, makes me feel old, man, because when I was in college, we used to do 80s night. We used to wear all these neon colors. I'm on TikTok or Twitter or something. And these kids are having 2000s night, man.
Yeah.
And they're rocking big jeans, big shirts, the chains. And I'm looking at them. I'm like, man, they look silly. Well, we thought we were fly back in the day, man.
Fresh. What? That was a style. But you know what they say, man? Fashion comes back around. You know, so don't be surprised to see the baggy era pull up again.
So you think there's going to be an era? See, that's the thing, too, where I feel like I'm in a point in my life to where I could never go back to the baggy. Like, the way I dress now is probably the way I'm going to dress for the rest of my life, right? Isn't that how the older folks do it?
I don't know about that, man.
You don't know about that? You can see yourself wearing baggy pants again.
I mean, maybe not on a consistent basis, but, you know, you got to mix it up. Listen, maybe this is what your son was trying to show you the other day, okay? You know, but you got to be able to mix it up, man, still, all right? Old is of the mind, Bump.
Old is of the mind. I feel you.
I saw that video, though. It was like, our school had a 2000s day. And it was like, no, it's officially like Soulja Boy was playing, and they were clowning on it, and they made all their big fake chains out of like aluminum foil. Like, this cannot be possible.
It can't be real, man. I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone or something like that. I know you guys are probably like, why are these guys talking about neon caps or whatnot in fashion? But the reason why we're talking about it is because, like I mentioned, the Mariners are looking to bounce back tonight against the Houston Astros. 90s night, the first 10,000 fans that get to the game will wear or will get a neon pink Mariners cap. Now, I'm going to watch the game, and I'm going to be interested to see how many people are actually rocking it and who rocks it the best. So if you do go to that game, take a picture, tag us or something like that. I want to see the style going on out there with that neon hat. Me, I see the hat, and I'm like, okay, I'm a hat guy. I got 30 hats, 30-plus hats. I'm like, do I rock it backwards? Do I wear it forward? You know what I mean? It looks like a hat you can wear in water. You know, it's a versatile type of hat. So when you get it, please make sure to take a picture.
Okay, I got a question for you, Turbo, and for Bump.
What's up?
Excuse me, I had to clear my throat. Did you wear the backwards hat growing up because of Griffey?
You know what? I was inspired for sure by Griffey. I think it was part of the culture anyway, but once I saw Griffey doing it in Home Run Derby with the swag, and it made it. Him and I want to say Deion Sanders, too, man. I think Deion used to rock the backwards cap, too. But they made it cool, man. I wasn't really a hat guy growing up, too, because I had braids back in the day, believe it or not. This bald
really?
Head had braids back in the day. So I had the designs in my head, man. I wanted to show the design. But when my hair was not on point, I definitely rocked the cap. Were you a hat guy back in the day, Turbo?
Well, while you was rocking the braids, I had the waves. You know what I'm saying? So I had my, you know, I was spending all day brushing my hair everywhere I went. Make sure I had my brush in my back pocket, the do-rag, right, to keep the hair down. But definitely on the baseball diamond in particular, to answer your question, backwards hat, absolutely. I started playing baseball when I was 8. You know, that was the first sport I ever started playing as a child. And so, yeah, man, you know, got a chance to wear the backwards hat and everything like that. On the baseball diamond in particular, definitely came from Griffey and Barry Bonds. Being a Bay Area kid, yeah. Barry Bonds used to wear his hat backwards as well. So always was inspired by the stars as a kid growing up.
Man, I remember growing up. So I grew up in West L.A., and the Griffey effect was felt down there too. I remember he was the first baseball player I can remember with his own shoe. I'm like, no baseball player has their own shoe, man. If you had the Griffeys growing up back in the day – man, you were styling with them. And they're still in style now. You got some Griffeys, Turbo?
Oh, yeah, I got some Griffeys. I definitely have some Griffeys sitting in the closet just chilling. You know, these classics. You bring them out every now and then just to pull them out, you know what I'm saying, show them off here and there. I got a couple pair, actually. Got them when I was in Seattle early in my career.
Yes. The Griffey Air Max?
The Griffey Air Max.
Yeah, those are my Sunday drivers. I have a pair that I've wanted since I was a little kid, just couldn't afford it. And then finally, like as an adult, I'm like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to spend that $190 on these shoes that I've wanted since I was a kid, and I'm only going to wear them like 3 times in my life.
Right. I'm going to splurge a little bit.
Yeah, I wore them to Griffey Hall of Fame night. Right. Like those are special when they get pulled out.
Are you a shoe guy, Justin?
Not really. It wasn't, again, growing up in Montana, it was like, you just need a pair of boots. Sneakers were not something that you got to like wear year round. I mean, they get wrecked immediately. But I respected the only shoes in the world that like really meant something and still like, I mean, talk about crossing all genres and age demos and anywhere you were in the world. The Concord Jordans and the Griffey Air Maxes. Mm, yeah. Those were the two that ever, didn't matter who you were. If you were a kid that watched sports, you wanted those for your entire life.
Well, I'll tell you right now, I couldn't afford to get them, okay?
Me either.
My first pair of Jordans, I was a rookie, and my first pair of Griffeys, I was a rookie as well. Matter of fact, I didn't even know Griffey had a shoe until I was drafted, which is kind of crazy. Yeah, I didn't. I'm like you, Justin. I mean, I didn't grow up in Montana, okay? But I wasn't a shoe guy like that. You know, we just weren't into shoes, you know, and so... And when I found out Griffey had a shoe, I was like, Griffey got a shoe? For how long has he had a shoe? Man, I got to cop me a
multiple
couple pairs.
Shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was the same way. I was like, look, Mom, so you telling me if I can get two pairs of shoes for the price of one? All right, I might get these two low-key shoes and hold off on the Griffeys and the Jordans. But, hey, guys, we have a great show for you today. We're going to talk about these Mariners. G. Scott is going to join us. Brock Huard is going to join us. Like I said, I'm with Turbo, Justin, and Brady behind the scenes in the ones and twos. Coming up next, we'll tell you everything you need to know, including what Seahawk player just took home some brand new hardware for the trophy case. That's next here on Seattle Sports Station.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Here's what you need to know. Mariners send struggling reliever Drew Steckenrider, who was a key part of the bullpen that helped the 2021 Mariners win 90 games, down to AAA in Tacoma. No corresponding moves was made. Thus, Seattle has one open spot on his 26-man MLB roster. And Jerry DePoto told us yesterday not to expect any help coming by the way of trade this point in the season.
Early in the season, you usually don't see trades until June, July. But I don't think that we're going to be able to address any of those needs via trade anytime soon.
Sounds like they just got to hold on to what's going on right now. Figure a way to get some wins. Now, the Mariners open up the first game of three against Houston at home tonight. Chris Flexen starting for the Mariners against Justin Verlander. He'll be on the hill for the Astros. First pitch is at 6:40, which you can hear here on Seattle Sports with Wyman and Bob leading you up to the pregame show number two.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Turbo's Golden State Warriors advancing their sixth NBA Finals in the past 8 years as they beat the Dallas Mavericks 120 to 111.
Golden State is going to the finals for the sixth time in the last 8 years. Big night for Klay Thompson with 32. A double-double for Looney. This crowd is back. They're on their feet, and their Warriors are going to the NBA Finals again.
Turbo, they said they couldn't do it. They said the dynasty was over, but somehow, some way, they add some young pieces to this team. Off to the finals they go. What's the feeling down there in the Bay? Turbo's from the Bay, if y'all don't know, so I'm feeling some pride for my guy right now.
Man, it's live in the Bay. It's live. Everybody's excited, man, pumped up, hyped. And particularly for me personally, I'm happy for a guy like Klay Thompson, you know, going through injuries, being, you know, have gone through that process myself, having multiple surgeries and things like that. I know what that feels like. So for him to be able to bounce back, come back this season, you can't be nothing but happy for Klay Thompson and the Warriors.
Speaking of Klay Thompson, he got a bit emotional after the series win.
It's just hard to put into words, man. Like, I dreamt of this day during some dog days. And to be here, I'm so thankful for our squad, man. They started the season so incredibly well, allowed us to finish out strong, and we are 4 wins away from a championship.
I'm feeling Klay. He's a Coug. I got my Coug hat on, so I got to give him a go, Cougs. Klay, go get yourself another championship. Here's the NHL playoffs update. The Carolina Hurricanes dropped the New York Rangers by a score of 3-1 and take a 3-2 series lead in the East. Edmonton Oilers dropped the Calgary Flames in overtime to win the series 4-1. Game 6 between Colorado and St. Louis Blues is tonight at 5 p.m. The Avalanche lead that series 3-2. Here's the game-winning goal by the greatest player in the game, apparently Connor McDavid.
Draisaitl to McDavid. McDavid shoots. Score! It's over!
Man, that was electric. I stayed up to watch that game. I hit up Justin. I'm like, man, did you check that? McDavid, this kid.
Connor McDavid is filthy.
Man, ice in his veins. Third year in the league. This kid is looking good. Here's the third thing you need to know.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Tyler Lockett joins a long list of Seahawks greats as he received the Seattle Sports Star of the Year award last night. After his third time being nominated, Lockett was also the winner of the 2021 Steve Largent Award and has been a nominee for the NFL's Walter Payton Man of the Year Award in the past. There's nothing this man cannot do, Turbo. He's great on the field. He's great off the field. He brings awareness to social issues. He's just a class act, man. I had one listener texted in and said, he's a renaissance, man. What are your thoughts on Tyler Lockett and his career on and off the field, Turbo?
Man, he's exactly that. He's been amazing. He was amazing to play with as a teammate. He's amazing off the field. And this guy, man, he's setting examples for the young guys. You know, he just sold his first house as a real estate agent a few weeks ago. Man, I mean, that doing things like that, that's the way, man. That's setting the example for the young guys coming up.
Man, the thing that I like about Lockett is he's like a low-key superstar. Like, there are a lot of ways to bring attention to yourself, whether, like I said, on and off the field. And he does it in a way that not too many people do it. Like, nowadays, It's all about me. Look at me. What am I doing? And he's having effects, but he's doing it on the humble, man. Like, that's something that, granted, if my son grows up to be a superstar, man, you go ahead and embrace it. But I just love Tyler Lockett's approach, Turbo.
Well, he puts God first, man. If anybody knows Tyler Lockett, that's what he's all about. You don't want the attention, all glory to God, and that's how he represents himself in his life.
Man, and he's put together three solid years, 1,000 yards, and DK gets a lot of the hype, which he should. But you always need a 1-2 combo. And I hope that a lot of these young guys, right, these young receivers especially who are coming in, the Bo Meltons, the Derek Youngs, the Freddie Swains who are there, like I hope they're watching and saying, look, there's different ways to be successful in this league. There's not always one way to do it. And I think DK and Lockett are a perfect example of that.
Oh, 100%, man. He's the undercover brother. But I read an article one time, and it was an interview with Allen Iverson talking about greatness. You know, how do you become great? And he said, Allen Iverson said, you know, there's many ways to be great. You just have to find your way. And Tyler, man, he certainly found his, and it's worked for him.
Hey, I want to kind of go back to the Warriors right now because I was one of those guys, Turbo. I thought it might be a done deal. But with the additions of Wiggins, Poole, you got Looney over there, these guys look like they can stretch this thing out maybe 2-3 more years. You think so?
Absolutely. Now, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, okay, but I will because we're talking about Golden State, okay? I said in the beginning of the season that they were going to make the finals. I thought James Wiseman was going to be a key contributor in that, and so once he was out for the season, there was a big question mark, you know, that came over the Warriors, in my opinion. But they've been able to, you know, fight through that. They've discovered some young players that were coming on at the end of last year, and it certainly has transitioned into this season. And so, man, it's been amazing to see what the Warriors have been able to do this season.
Now, tonight, Boston plays the Heat at 5:30. The Celtics lead the series 3-2. I think Boston's going to get it done. And I think that's probably the tougher matchup for the Warriors because Boston's defense is crazy. Jason Tatum is playing well. Jaylen Brown is doing his thing. The OG Al Horford is contributing. Who do you want to see? But does it even matter to you? Are you guys that cocky over there in the Bay where it don't even matter who you play? You just want to get there and get it done?
It definitely doesn't matter who we play at all. At all. But I think it would be more entertaining to play against the Celtics. You know, no disrespect to the Heat or anybody who likes the Heat out there, but listen, Jason Tatum and the rest of those fellas, Marcus Smart, man, they're a fun bunch to watch, and I think that matchup against the Warriors is very even because of the type of teams, you know, both sides have. I think they match up very well with one another, and it's going to be tough sledding for the Warriors against the Boston Celtics, but I still see them getting it done in 6 games.
I believe it. It's going to be a great series. All right, coming up next, we'll hear from the Mariners GM and President of Baseball Operations, Jerry DePoto, on what it would take for a bounce back and when we might be seeing some help for the struggling lineup. That's next on Seattle Sports.
The Jerry DePoto Show, presented by Seattle Pump and Equipment on Seattle Sports Station.
Welcome back to the Mike Salk Show. Mike Lefko and Michael Bumpus here today, and please be joined by Mariners President of Baseball Operations, Jerry DePoto. Jerry, we appreciate you taking some time this morning on an off day and after kind of a tough month, you know, some injuries and bad luck, and a couple of long road trips have really combined to make this a tough month. We did see the team bounce back last year in June, so I want to know, what will it take to have a similar bounce back this year and into June as May comes to an end here?
Yeah, we're simply going to have to play better. And, you know, we did find ourselves in almost an identical situation last year at, you know, almost identically this time. We had a good start to the last season. I think the first 20, 21 games, we were notable, 13-8. And then we fell off hard, you know, lost, I think 18 of our next 26 and found ourselves near the bottom of the division and had to claw out. And that's what we did. And this year we have to do the same. We put ourselves in a good sized hole. And in addition to, you know, what has been a really tough schedule and some injuries, et cetera, it's just simply been uneven play. You know, we have not been hitting on all chords and really on any single night. It didn't feel like our pitching, our hitting, our defense and our general clutchness, which is what carried us last year, have really lined up. And that's been a struggle for us to find that sink. You know, winning 2 games in a row has been a struggle. And And in the baseball season, it feels like it's never going to happen. But, you know, these are the ebbs and flows of 162. And, you know, we'll turn it around. And I hope that starts this weekend because we've got a pretty tough opponent coming in for the three-day weekend.
Jerry, it's been tough as of late, but Julio Rodriguez had a good month of May. Did you see him having the success that he's having now, or were you expecting him to have a slower ascend to the player he is today?
You know, Michael, you never know with the young players. Some guys hit the ground running, and they are, you know, effectively who they are from day one, and other guys take a little bit of time. And you know, we've had a series of young players: Julio, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Jarrett Kelenic, Cal Raleigh, and you know, of that group. But Jarrett's taken some time. It's been a struggle, and Cal similarly. You know, he's finding ways to contribute this last week, and you're seeing some progress. You know, Logan, it took him about 2 months and he leveled out and found his ground, and now he just keeps getting better. And Julio, it was even quicker. You know, it's been a pretty quick ascent to feeling comfortable doing what he does on a baseball field. And you know, that's what really good and great young players do. And Julio at 21 for the last, I'd say, 5 weeks has really, you know, shown you what he's capable of on a big league field. And it's exciting to watch. And we've needed it, frankly. It's been kind of a bright spotlight in what has otherwise been a really tough month to watch.
Yeah, he really has been fun. Really fun to see that joy that he plays with as well. But, Jerry, I know when you were on with Salk a couple of weeks before the season began, you mentioned opening day not necessarily being an arbitrary deadline to stop adding talent. So as this stretch has progressed and, you know, as April has turned into May and some injuries have piled up, are there still potential deals you're looking at, or have new things kind of caused you to pop up and reevaluate what you might be looking to add or maybe not add?
You're always looking to add and reevaluate. We reevaluate roughly every day. You know, you're trying to find the best combination of players to lead you, to the promised land or to championship baseball. And right now we don't feel like we're particularly close. Some of that's going to come from within. You know, the recent return of Kyle Lewis, what we hope is the returns of guys like Mitch Haniger and Tom Murphy, Abraham Toro, and I guess on the pitching side, closer are guys like Ken Giles and Eric Swanson, who's so good for us, and that'll help. But down in our bullpen, so you know, those are the obvious. The more abstract, it's hard to make trades early in the season. And you know, Scott and I were talking about it last night. Actually, the trade that we made back in May, I think of 2018, with the Rays that brought Denard Span and Alex Colome to the Mariners. It was a very unusual and I guess it was a unique trade in its timing. You usually don't see trades until June, July. And I don't sense that the market is really cooking yet. There's a couple of teams that may be willing to move, but we still see ourselves as a young, growing team. And we watched it a year ago. We watched ourselves claw out of this hole and frankly, get back. We were in first place by the middle of June. So it's a young season yet, but I don't think that we're going to be able to address any of those needs via trade anytime soon, which is part of the reason we went and signed Justin Upton. You know, he's a guy who's been through it before. He's a four-time All-Star, and he was available as a free agent. You know, it's going to take a little time to get him up to speed and ready to play full time, which hopefully we're there by somewhere during this next road trip, and Justin can come help us out and really start to augment what's happening in our lineup and our outfield.
So what about the bullpen, though? And as you wait for guys like you mentioned, like Eric Swanson and Ken Giles, to return from injury, could Matt Brash be a quicker option, or does he still need some more time down there? I saw he had a nice inning last night, had a good eighth inning, but is that too quickly to rush him back up to the majors as a reliever?
It's too quick. And, you know, we want to take our time and make sure we do it right. And that goes for all of our players, is that to the best we can do that. Sometimes injury forces you to push players quicker than you'd like. But in Matt's case, we're transitioning him from a starter to a bullpen. We've talked to him about a mentality. Last night was his first one-inning outing, and I think you'll see him start to pitch a little bit more frequently here in the future, near future. rather than what were more, I guess, selectively timed outings, to start acclimating him to shorter outings and I guess more frequent usage. He's had a handful of really nice outings. He's had another handful of outings where he's struggled to make that adjustment. And that's being young. I mean, he's still a young player in the PCL, which is, we do have a pretty young group. And, Matt's got great stuff. We believe he is very much a part of the long-term solution. But to put that kind of pressure on him right now with a bullpen that has really struggled for the last couple of weeks is probably not fair.
Hey, Jerry, the national experts are saying, look, the Mariners aren't as bad as their record is showing, and they feel like you guys are close to finding the right formula. I look at the lineup, but I see how you guys are moving things around. How close do you think you are from being the team that you expected to be this season?
Yeah, we actually expected to be it. So, this all catches us a little bit by surprise, and some of it is just finding the right rhythm. We have nine spots in our lineup. Right now we have five players that are on pace for a 3.5 or 4 win season by WAR, which is a big number. And both in that there's five of them, and 3.5, 4 win is that's pretty rare air. Not too many guys in a given year do that. And we've got guys like Adam Frazier and Julio, like Ty France and JP Crawford and Eugenio Suarez, who are all on that pace. Unfortunately, we don't have anyone else who is contributing to that. So, we're getting to points in our lineup where we do create traffic. If you look at our team, and this is why the national experts are, I guess, a little bit more bullish on what will happen moving forward. We do control the strike zone. We do get on base. Our offense by weighted runs created plus came into the game yesterday ranked 8th in Major League Baseball, which is, I know it's hard to believe when you're watching what's happening, but we have actually under the hood been pretty good. We're just not turning it into runs. That's why I said our clutchiness is not what it was a year ago, and it's gotten better. Over the last this homestand, we are scoring, but the combination of an uneven lineup and just right now a roster that has not delivered up and down, and that's on me to try to figure out how to put the right pieces in place. But we really do feel like we have those. A lot of those guys are sitting in our clubhouse or on our IL, and we just have to get them out there and find the right order to bat them. And most of it's on our pitching. We have to do a better job of throwing strike one and not finding ourselves behind in counts, because that's where we're coming up with what our biggest problem has been, which is keeping the ball in the ballpark. It's hard to win games when you're giving up home runs at the rate that we have over these last 6 weeks.
Well, Jerry, it's an off day and then a big series against the Astros this weekend, so we appreciate you taking the time with us today.
You got it, guys. Glad to join.
Well, they've had their off day, and now it's time to take on the Astros. The Mariners are 18-27, last in the division. And they got to see Justin Verlander, 6-1, 1.2 ERA. The guy is, what, is he 40? Almost pushing 40, coming off of Tommy John surgery, and he is just in his zone right now. You're looking to bounce back, Justin. How tough is it going to be to bounce back against an Astros team that's doing what they do, and that's just win ballgames?
Honestly, it's probably as tough as it gets, right? Right. I mean, we felt this way going to New York against the Mets, too. It's like you're facing Scherzer. This is a crazy lineup. And then the Mariners take 2 out of 3 and win the series.
Yeah.
Mariners started against the Astros at home. Really, really offensive. That's where we saw all the firepower against the Astros early in the season. Behind Marco, one scored like 18 runs, I think, on that. Or 18. 11 runs on that that Friday game. And you were surprised then, maybe, but it was the beginning of the season. So it was like, okay, this is what we've been hearing about. These are all the bats. These are all the new guys. These are all the additions. This is Jesse Winker. This is Frazier, who went off that night and hit, I think, a triple and almost hit for the cycle. But the offense that you've seen from the last month, disappearing. And now you face one of, if not top three guys in the game right now on the hill. It's like an old, like you said, the ageless wonder who's somehow getting stronger. This is as tough as it gets.
Man, and think about Jerry, too. He's not ignoring the struggles, right? Pitching has to be better. We have to find a way to get runs in. There is traffic on the bases, right? They have a lot of runners in scoring position. They're just not able to put it together. They're mixing up the lineup, right? We've seen Winker start in the number one spot, move Julio to the number four spot and clean up. You bring in K. Lou at the DH spot. You're trying to see what's going on there. They do have a lot of guys on IL. So it's almost like he's not making an excuse, but he's saying, look, these are our problems, but there is hope because we have some other guys that we can depend on. Now, Jerry mentions the 2018 trade with the Rays.
Yeah. Bernard Spann, Alex Colome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what he's talking about with Scott last night. Why are we discussing that?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to add, that was something that, like, when I first heard, I kind of glazed over. I was like, yeah, that was a day game. Did Scott call him late at night and was like, hey, we've done this before.
Help your boy out.
We need some help right now. Like, it's, I know it's early, but we need some help. And Jerry basically said, like, sorry.
He said, look, man, we got guys who are injured. We bring over Suarez. We have a Winker. K-Lew is back. You still got Robbie Ray. And Robbie Ray's been, like, probably one of the most confusing players on this roster.
Totally.
Because he's throwing good stuff, right? I mean, that sinker is beautiful. That fastball got up to 95, I believe, the other day. He'll put together some great innings, but then there's that one inning that just happens to get him. And he's not even ignoring that. Robbie Ray, he acknowledges it. Like, look, I have to get rid of that one inning. Is it as simple as just going out to the mound and keep throwing the rock and trying to figure it out? Is it a mentality thing? Like, how does Robbie get to the guy that we were used to seeing?
Well, and I was still going to ask you and Turbo here, too, is you guys both being professional athletes. Like, you've dealt with being on a struggling team where you know on paper that you're better than what you're putting out there. And what does it take? Like, I know baseball players, for me, when I played, and I didn't play beyond the collegiate level, but you start changing everything. You're like, all right, I'm gonna pull my pants all the way up today. I'm going tall socks today. I'm going to cut my hair. I'm going to do something. There's always something you try to do. Like, what did you guys ever have when you were going through a rough patch, whether it was personally or as a team?
What you got, Turbo?
Man, you know, that's a great question because, yeah, you do those things differently. Like, man, you put together a different playlist. You know, I'm going to listen to some different music pregame and stuff like that. But you got to lean on your teammates. I think this is the important part when your team is struggling, man. You got to be able to lean on each other. And it sounds like there might be a little bit of a mental roadblock there, right? It's almost like, man, this is, you know, for whatever reason, I'm having that one inning. That's a struggle for me. And then, you know, that kind of becomes like a repetitive thing because it's always on your mind. And so you got to find, you know, some kind of aspect there where, you know, you're able to build more confidence and kind of delete, in a sense, some of those negative things that you're thinking about when you're out there playing on the diamond. And so I used to always, you know, lean on my teammates, and usually that would help for me build confidence and kind of ignore some of the things that were getting me down when I was out there playing.
Man, I would start with myself, right? What can I do to help this team out? And to me, I would always get back to the fundamentals. As a receiver, is look the football in. Make sure your splits are good. Get to your depth. Be where you're supposed to be. And then eventually the game will start coming back to you. So as for the Mariners, I'm like, okay, what does that look like for you guys? You know, Turbo talks about changing his pregame routine. You talk about – and baseball are the most superstitious athletes in all of the land. Maybe you tie your left shoe different. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Maybe you wear a different glove, you use a different bat. But this reminds me of a conversation we had a couple of days ago, Justin, is where's the leadership on this team?
Yeah.
There's a lot of young dudes.
That's what I was going to ask Turbo. I was like, you leaning on your teammates. When you say that, are you talking about the guys that you're just close with, or are you talking about the captains of the team? Who do you mean when you say you're leaning on your teammates?
Yeah, no, it's both. It's both. And it's both because it kind of depends on where you're at. You know what I mean? Like, there might be a situation where, you know, you're not feeling great about yourself, and so you go and lean on the guys that you're close with, the homies, the guys that you're talking to on a you know, on a consistent basis, and they're there to lift you up. But man, sometimes when that feeling's a little bit stronger, that's when you want to go and lean on leadership, because, you know, a lot of times your boys, you know, they'll be real with you, but they're going to be encouraging. They're going to tell you what you want to hear a lot of times. Yeah. Leadership and guys who are in a leadership position will oftentimes, tell you what it is that you need to hear. And so, you know, leaning on that, having that availability from a leadership standpoint is important. I've been on teams where it was like, you know, I don't know who the leader is. You know, I'm my own leader, essentially,
right?
Because there's nobody of that caliber on this team. And that can be hurtful, you know, for teams to not have real leadership you know, to lean on, and maybe with the acquisition of Upton, that'll change. But you certainly need that on a team.
And here's the thing too. At some point, you're sitting in that locker room, you're looking around like, things got to change, right? That guy's not performing.
Yeah.
This guy's not performing. You know, how do they feel about my performance? And it's not like this is college or high school to where, yes, you need the rah-rah, you need the team camaraderie, but this is a business. And if you are not producing, guys are going to make moves. So then I assume, just like in any other sport, these guys start feeling that pressure to perform. We're seeing guys being sit down to AAA, right? If you're not producing, they're going to make some moves. Like, how does that affect their play? You know, Turbo, have you ever been in a situation to where you're looking in that locker room and you're like, okay, things have to change right now? Does that change relationships? Does it change the mood of the team, or is it just business as usual?
Yeah, it's a combination of all of it, because it's business as usual, because, you know, you still have to go to the next practice and you still have to play the next game. But I remember being in a situation as a rookie, you know, obviously you had Marshawn, there was me, there was Leon Washington, and we were kind of the, you know, the three backs there. And I was the backup for a long time. I was number two, you know, OTAs and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, for whatever reason, I wasn't performing well. I wasn't performing well during one stage in training camp and early on in the season. And so I was demoted to number three, and Leon got a promotion, I guess, for lack of a better way to describe it, and became the backup running back. And I just remember feeling so down and you know, not being confident. But like I mentioned, that's where the leaders come in, you know, Coach Sherm coming in talking to me. But like guys like, you know, like Marshawn and even Leon. You know, like, hey man, listen, you know, this is your spot. You can do it. You belong in this game. You know, you were drafted here for a reason, and those things were uplifting for me, and I was able to turn it around, and obviously was able to continue and have a pretty good career in Seattle. And so, you know, the Mariners, that it sounds like that's something that they need in that locker room. You know, who's the guy that is able to then be uplifting for these players, understanding like, yes, you know, it's a business, but you guys are here for a reason. You belong here, you know, so just go out there and play like it, play free. You know what I'm saying? Like, and to help them build that confidence.
That's something I've always been curious about, Bump, is you hear that all the time. Like, we know this is a business. And like when a player gets traded and they interview their teammate and it's like, yeah, at the end of the day, I know this is a business. Yeah, but you're a human. Like, the businessmen make the business decisions, right? Or the business people, they're the ones who decide who goes up and down, who gets traded, who you acquire, and who you don't. But how do you flip that switch where you're like, okay, I have to get out of being a player right now and look at this from the business perspective when maybe you don't actually feel that way?
It's a tough switch, man. It's a tough switch. How do you do it? I think you just rely on who you are in your day-to-day and how you approach things, right? Because you have to be in the moment. You have to enjoy being on this M's roster. You have to enjoy going to the ballpark every day and taking it in and immerse yourself in the moment. I think it's more reflective afterwards, after a game, after a practice. You take it home with you. That's when it becomes more of a business. Like, how did I perform today? How did I practice today? Did I execute? Did I do what I was supposed to do? So I think that's probably the approach right there. Now, something that we've been hearing a lot from the M's organization is the farm system, the prospects, right? Bob Nightingale had some words about that.
You know, you get tired of hearing about prospects. You want to see it, you know, translate to the major league level. You know, the old joke in baseball is you want to be the cover of Baseball America or having the best prospects, or the cover of Sports Illustrated and having a parade.
I'll take Sports Illustrated all day. I mean, you need that support, right? You need to bring young guys up. You have to develop them, but that's not why you do this. You do this to win championships. You do this to be one of the best teams in the AL, at least starting the division, AL West, and we're just not seeing that. So this is 2022. We had high expectations for this year, partly because of these young guys that they were bringing up. But if I am the M's right now, you got to win. You got to produce. We got to get on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Exactly. I mean, we've been saying this for years. It's like I used to celebrate going to the park, and these are some of the bad days of these Mariners teams when they're losing close to 100 games. It was like I used to go and celebrate the small things, like our pitcher threw a complete game today. You know, like, and I'm tired of celebrating the little things. Like, I want to plan a parade. I'm happy to hear about the farm system. I'm happy we have those guys. I'm happy we're starting to hit. I'm glad Julio has hit and is being one of those prospects. But I want to win something. And that has to happen.
Yeah, it has to happen. And we expect it to happen now. I mean, this is the first time
in
6-7 years that I've been following this team pretty tough. Like, all right, it's time to win right now. And Turbo, you played on teams with expectations.
Yes.
You played on teams that have met expectations and that didn't meet expectations. When you're on a team that has those expectations of winning and you're not quite there, is that a conversation that's being had? Like, come on, guys, we got to turn this up. Do you feel the pressure to perform more than you would if you didn't have those expectations?
Yes and no. Yes and no. And I say that because here's the thing. Here's the important thing about being in a situation where there's high expectation. You have to – it's important to make sure that you're still approaching things the same way, the way that you always have. Now, of course, there's going to be some tweaks and you're going to make some adjustments and things like that, right? But, man, what were the things that were making the Mariners successful? And then as a Mariners player on that roster, you ask yourself, you know, what were the things that were making me successful as an individual towards the end of last season as well? And now you go into the new season with all of these expectations, but expectations are just expectations. Like, but playing the game is playing the game, and that's what it's all about, and that's where the focus should lie. And listen, you know, we used to always talk about focusing on things that you can control, that, you know, you can control how many, you know, hits that you're, how many at bats you're getting after practice, right? How much time you're spending in the bullpen and stuff like that. Like, you know, how much film you're watching and your study habits and those things. Those are the things that you control. All of the outside noise, the quote unquote pressure. Coach used to tell us pressure are only for those who are unprepared. And so, you know, there is no pressure. You know what I mean? Focus on the things that you can control as a professional athlete, and that'll take you to everywhere that you want to go.
I love it. They got Verlander tonight, so we'll see if they can control what they can control. Get on base, get runners in scoring position, and get them in. All right, both Turbo and I have experience with media as professional athletes, but how do you react when members of the media are saying things that aren't so flattering? We'll dive into that next. It's the Mike Salk Show. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com.